My guest this afternoon is Dr. Jose Luis Muartua. He is Director of Orchestral Studies and Professor of Composition at the CMU School of Music. Welcome, Jose. Thanks for joining me today.
Thank you, Judith. It's always a pleasure to be here with you.
And as you know, we are celebrating all things Beethoven this week, and I know that you are a big fan.
Always, always, yes, always have been.
You are professor of composition, among other things, at CMU. As a composer, what impact has Beethoven had on you?
Let me tell you, what impact has Beethoven had on all composers would be the question. And I mean, even we in the 21st century can actually feel his influence still today. Many people, especially 20th century composers, will probably tell you that Stravinsky has been one of the most influential figures in the last century. But then through the centuries, I could say Beethoven has been a very powerful one. Not that there hasn't been other composers, of course. We all benefit from the influence from several of them. But Beethoven in particular has certain things in terms of his music and personality that actually have influenced everyone. In my case, I have heard Beethoven's music at different moments in my life, and even before I actually started to study music. And there was always something attractive about his melodies and about the harmony and what the melodies tell you without words. And I found it fascinating from the very beginning.
Well, you know, yesterday we spoke with Kevin Rhodes, and one of the things that he said is Beethoven could just write good tunes.
Yeah, and you know what's interesting? He's absolutely right about that. Good tunes, and each one actually said something different. And what is so cool is, I mean, like the part of, you know, I didn't know at the time, you know, when I began to listen to Beethoven's music was, before I started to study music was, it was not only the melody, but all the stuff associated with it, all the harmonies, the accompaniments, the additional lines that go with it, where the real craft is. You know, it's like a melody hits you, a tune hits you, and you write it down. And then all the stuff that you write for it to come to life, you know, for whatever ensemble you write it for, whatever medium you write it for, has to be complemented by all these other lines and harmonies. That's a lot of craft right there. And only when I started studying and analyzing Beethoven's music, I realized all the work that went into it, that a melody is not that it's not work, but, you know, sometimes it comes to you naturally. And then all the stuff around it is like what you make happen to enhance that melody and make it what it actually is.
Mm-hmm. And when you are in school studying composition, is Beethoven's music, do you study that a lot, study a lot of his scores?
Usually for, you know, like in the analysis courses that you take, theory courses and analysis courses, orchestration also, you actually study Beethoven. In terms of composition itself, you have already nurtured your mind and soul with these things along with music by other composers. So there are particular orchestral gestures or compositional gestures or things that happen in the use of the harmony and the melody that you are influenced by, and you naturally use them in your own music. But the goal is to use it in the way that you would use it, not in the way that Beethoven would use it, so that your music doesn't sound like Beethoven's or any other composer's music, but like your own.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Well, leaving your composer hat on now, of course, the big question is, well, Beethoven lived from 1770 to 1827, and by around 1800, he realized that he was losing his hearing, which is so ironic and, of course, so tragic for this brilliant musician and composer. So he was about 30 years old, maybe not even 30 years old, and lived, you know, half of his life then without much of his hearing. And now we think, wow, how did he write all of this music? You know, did he hear it in his head? So in your opinion, as a composer, could you hear the music in your head before you get it down on paper?
I was used to listen to music a lot. I used to listen to all these LPs at home. And took the time to actually listen to all the kinds of music that I could put my hands and ears onto. but you know, later, I never realized this, but with all this listening and listening and listening, you kind of like begin to construct a bank of sound mm-hmm. in your head somehow. Mm-hmm. And so I would remember the tunes in my head without singing them. I had not yet associated the listening or the remembering of that mentally without producing any sound with the looking at the music, at the signs written on paper and being able to hear the music when you're reading it in your head. That came later.
Mm-hmm.
First, it was this idea that music was always to be heard. So if I listened to something and I remembered it, I immediately would begin to hum it or sing it. And then professionally speaking, you know, like you kind of like lead into that natural state of remembering something and not necessarily making any sound with it, but just keeping it in your mind. And then later creating your own melodies that you could hear in your head and then write it down as if you were dictating it to yourself, but without playing it on the piano or any other instrument or without listening to it from any other medium. Which I thought, you know, that's kind of cool. I when I discovered that, I began to feed that more and more, and I always mention that to my students to inspire them to, you know, begin to do the same and to hear music in your head and writing it down or looking at the score and figure out what it sounds like by looking at it, not necessarily by singing it, but by thinking it.
Wow. So he did hear it in his head, and it can be done.
Yeah, absolutely. And in his case, of course, it was a compelling talent that he had to use because he couldn't hear things physically outside of his head, even if he made an effort for it. But again, he had all these sounds that he had already accumulated. But the way of using them and the combinations of these sounds, it's like that's always an exploratory experience. You know, it's like investigating what can happen with that. And for that, you really need to hear them in detail. So you go to your piano and try to play this or that and see if it really works.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So he had no choice but simply go for it and be sure that it would work as it did, which is amazing.
I like what you said about having a sound bank in your head. That's really interesting.
That's the way I usually see it. It's like with all the years that we have of listening music and playing in ensembles and all that, you kind of begin to construct. It's like I memorized some combinations of chords that later the actual combination of whatever the tune was disappeared and it just became it as something that you would kind of like use at some point. You
mm-hmm.
would call it and use it, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, of course, there's the famous story about Beethoven that at the premiere of the Ninth Symphony that he wanted to conduct, but mm-hmm. they had someone else conduct alongside of him because they told the musicians mm-hmm. he doesn't really know what's going on. So he sort of conducted and someone else did too. And then, of course, he could not hear the applause at the end of the symphony. There's that famous scene in the movie, Immortal Beloved, where
yes.
that story takes place. So he may have heard that music in his head to compose the music, but then he didn't really hear the performances.
Right, right. And conducting is a different skill altogether. And you are now doing things outside of yourself, and you have a group of people in front of you. That will actually, you know, it will be like a give and take kind of thing. You will lead, and at some other moments, you will follow certain things.
Mm-hmm.
And so you try to keep a balance that way. And musicians rely on you for certain moments. Musicians aren't in the orchestra are not necessarily looking at the conductor all the time. But there are moments when they actually will need the conductor to be together for a certain passage or a certain cue or some important moment in the work. And that's when they really look at you and they all put that attention into it and things work. But then if you have someone like Beethoven at that moment who couldn't hear what was going on, it's like sometimes if you have to wait for certain things, you know, he was pretty much doing it on his own.
Mm-hmm.
And so I imagine that it would have been hard to follow for certain things because then the way you hear in your head is one thing, but then you pair it up with the way the musicians are playing the music. And so to keep the balance between those two sound images, is what's so important for the conductor. And so that's why things happen that way, I believe.
Well, I'm really glad you brought that up, because I was going to ask you to take off your composer hat and put on your conductor hat. And as a conductor, what are some of the joys and challenges of conducting Beethoven?
It really comes down to which piece it is specifically. But I believe that, aside from the choral works, the Fantasia for piano and orchestra and chorus, the Ninth Symphony, which is a chorus at the end, the other symphonies, for example, are something that always bring joy to me. We've been able to perform some of them here at the university, and I'm a fan of all of them, but we've been able to perform here the first, the seventh at some point. The sixth we read, the fifth we read, the eighth we have performed as well. So those are symphonies that I usually enjoy a lot. I enjoy the second too, but we haven't looked at the second yet here. I'm all for those symphonies, for the instrumental part of it. He has great vocal works too. I remember that I prepared the Choral Fantasy at some point. This was back in Peru, but then there was something that happened and we didn't get to perform it. But that's a piece that I actually sang in the chorus of that one when I was a student. And those experiences are there in my memory. I always love his symphonies, and I'm definitely all for them. I hope one day I get to conduct all nine of them.
That would be great. I do happen to know that the Sixth Symphony is a particular favorite of yours, and we will hear that today. Would you tell me a little bit about that?
Sure. The Sixth Symphony, it's the first symphony by Beethoven that I ever conducted in a concert. And I was very young at the time, and I remember my teacher had trained me for a couple of years on different repertoire, and this is one of the things that she chose for me to conduct. And she said I was ready to do it, and I did it, and I was very scared, but at the same time, it was a wonderful thing. It was a wonderful challenge, and I remember studying it. I remember seeing what will I do here or there for this gesture or that part of the symphony, and trying to understand it all. It's a massive work, and the orchestration itself has certain interesting things. He uses piccolo in that symphony, but only in storm. And he uses trombones also, but only in the last two movements, the fourth and the fifth movements. So, and in the last movement, he hasn't used timpani at all. And so it was a great experience, and I had heard a little portion of it in a TV commercial, believe it or not, in my pre-real musical days, just like when I was listening to things really and not really studying music yet. And when I studied the symphony, I found that theme in there, and I thought, oh my gosh, that's where that theme comes from, as many things in Beethoven, because things that I had heard in different places, when I started symphonies, oh my gosh, I've heard this before,
Yes, yeah. So much of his music is so iconic, even beyond the first four notes of the Fifth Symphony.
Yeah, which has been used extensively. Mm-hmm. You hear that everywhere. I heard the bassoon solo in from the second movement of the Pastoral in a mattress commercial. When I was a kid, I was like, this is on these mattresses.
Wow.
Yeah, they had these people kind of like floating, like on the mattress, the quality of the mattress and this and that. And there was Beethoven, bassoon solo from the second movement of the Pastoral.
That's funny.
It is funny. I mean, people have different conceptions of things, so they believe that the music would match this or that and use it for that image.
Yes.
To enhance the image, yeah.
I'm sure that Beethoven would be happy that his music has lasted these many, many years, but I don't know how he'd feel about the mattress commercial.
I don't either. It was an interesting use of it. Then, the media come up with new ideas, and they use it, in any way to see not only Beethoven's music, but music by different composers.
Yes, yes. Well, on the other hand, it does introduce classical music to so many people, even in that strange way.
Yeah, because the funny part about it is, like, I heard it there, and I always remember that tune, because that happens with Beethoven tunes. You tend to remember them always. And when I studied it, and I saw where in the score at one moment that happened, and I was aware of it, and then was like, okay, that's exactly what that happened. I had no problem recalling it. You know, it's like as you conduct the piece, you recall the music in your head. You're kind of singing it inside, but at the same time moving to your singing, which is matching the playing of the orchestra. I think it's a fascinating process, if you ask me. But then I had no problem remembering that tune there. It was, I knew exactly where it was going to happen, and I went with it, because I knew from that commercial that was the first time that I heard it. I couldn't take that out of my mind. You know?
Well, you know, the folks who decided to use that music for the mattress commercial were pretty smart, because that's what they wanted. They wanted that to stay in your head and everybody else's head, too.
Yes, yes. And I couldn't avoid seeing the, you know, the image of the mattress on the screen on TV whenever I heard that.
Well, that's back to Beethoven could write a good tune.
Absolutely, many good ones for sure. And there was a you know, the Turkish march, which is well known too. Mm-hmm. You know, for solo piano, they used it in a Mexican comedy show, but in an arrangement for you know, that sound kind of comedic and funny. So it was not done on piano; it was done on different using different instruments and sound effects. And, you know, first time I heard that, you know, I was hooked with that, or to that show, and I loved the music. And then many years later, I came to discover that it was actually written by Beethoven also.
Well, more proof that Beethoven's music really does live on through the ages and in all sorts of forms and guises.
Absolutely, absolutely. It doesn't matter what century you live in, you know, it's always there.
So as we look forward to celebrating Beethoven's birthday, what do you think you might be doing on the 16th to celebrate?
Well, I'll probably still be celebrating my birthday, and I will join it with celebrating his, because I was born 3 days before he was. And I was thinking, okay, so maybe I can celebrate mine, do it for a couple of days, and then jump into celebrating Beethoven's too.
Why not? Just 3 days of celebration. Go for it.
Yeah. Yes, and then the sixth, the Pastoral Symphony that we're talking about, was premiered on December 22nd, so it was very close to Christmas, so that's another reason to celebrate, you know?
Just keep it going. Why not? This is the year to do it.
Absolutely, yes.
Jose, thanks so much for joining me today. Dr. Jose Luis Moartua is Director of Orchestral Studies and Professor of Composition at the CMU School of Music. It's always so nice to talk to you. Thank you so much.
Oh, thank you, Judith. I really appreciate the opportunity. Thank you for the invitation, and thank you for giving me a chance to talk about some of the things I love the most. Thank you.